You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. And even though we've got the Olympics on right now, the NBA season is getting closer. And if you hit the link in our description to pre-order NBA 2K25, you get a free 12-month subscription to NBA League Pass. So it's a great deal. If you enjoy watching NBA, then you get 2K, you get League Pass for free, and bing, bang, bosh, you're happy. So hit the link, support the show. Appreciate you guys. It's myself, Momency, alongside me as always, the one and only point guard guru, Mr. BJ Armstrong, and the GM extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry.
How you guys doing?
Good, good.
You heard that one in a minute. Well, it's Friday, right. So we're answering the questions from the people. Now, we've been talking about the Olympics all week, and some of these games tip off quite early. They tip off 11 a.m. local time. And Paul wants to know, BJ, how would you prepare for a game that tips off at 11 a.m.?
How would I prepare? Like I always do.
Good, no, because your routine, your game day routine is thrown off. Do you start the same routine much earlier?
That's it. You know, you get to the game. What's sort of a 7:30 game? So you're there 90 minutes before. I would always eat 4 hours before any tip off, any game
so
that
eat
I would
at
play.
7 a.m.
Get to the I'm at the latest. I would always get there two and a half, you know, sometimes 3 hours depending on that game, how I was feeling, and do my normal routine. So time was no big deal for me. Because of playing, you know, when you play on the West Coast, you know, a 7:30 tip on the East Coast is a 4:30 tip. You know, your biological clock is still the same. So wherever I was at, I just functioned. So it didn't matter. The hardest part for me was when I was playing on the East Coast and then you would travel to the West Coast, because a 7:30 tip is like a 10:30 tip, you know, on East Coast time. Mm-hmm. So that's the only one that I felt was hard for me to get over. But, you know, as long as I get my nap, as long as I, you know, did my routine, it always felt the same, except that one exception, which was when I went from East Coast to West Coast.
Okay. Well, all the questions are in through our Discord server. If you want to have your question answered, you can hit the link in the description. It's down there as well to join the Discord. We got a question for Scott from Tyler Bacanay, who says, what's your favorite memory as a general manager aside from winning the championship with Detroit?
Aside from winning the championship at Detroit? Boy, that's a very good question. I'm going to give him two moments. Obviously, the first, when I was hired as general manager of the Knicks, that was a very exciting day for me. To finally, you know, ascend to that position, had my family come in, you know, my wife and daughter. My mom was able to fly in from Detroit. My brother and sister, they all came in for the press conference. So that was a very special day, special memory for me, kicking off my career there in New York. And I'd say the next favorite day, or most exciting day, was when we first made the playoffs in New York. When we finally, for all, you know, all those years, those few years of trimming salary, making a lot of trades, drafting young players, starting to develop those young players. You know, there's a lot of machinations to go on to get to that point when you're taking over a roster that, you know, needed to be, you know, rebuilt and pointed towards a playoff path. So that stands out to me when we first made it at that first playoff series. The Garden was popping. We were coming out of COVID. And so that was Tibbs' first year as a coach, and just the excitement that centered around our team throughout the city was a fun time.
Absolutely. We got a question from Luke Godfrey, who wants to know, how does the CBA affect, BJ, you as an agent, and Scott, you as a GM, your roles within the game? He says there are some good players out there who aren't getting the money they probably should. So could this end up being a problem for the league in the long run? Kind of a complex question, I guess, alluding to the rise of max contracts and guys just picking up
the new CBA.
Minimum. Yeah.
And I'll let BJ add on to this. Regardless of what structure we're under in terms of the CBA, and that, I've been under a few different CBAs during my time as a front office executive in the league, you're always going to have some guys that, obviously are going to be at the top end of the scale in terms of making money. And then when free agency hits, which I think the caller is asking for questions, it's like the old game. They play musical chairs over in London, Mo. You ever play that game in school? It's a, what ends up happening is that as the elite talent starts to come off the board and they absorb a lot of the empty, the available salary cap space, there's invariably going to be a handful of players who miss out on said cycle, on a free agency cycle. So I think that's going to always be with us. I don't think there's going to be a situation where everywhere, unless you go to a system similar to baseball where there's no salary cap. See, if you had no salary cap like in baseball, then that now it just gets down to what, teams are willing to pay.
And then you say
And
goodbye to parity across the league.
exactly,
Goodbye to the small market. Okay.
Exactly. And so I don't see that happening in the NBA anytime soon. So
BJ, anything to add?
no, I think Scott summed it up. And I love to say what people deserve. Well, it's not what you deserve, it's what you can negotiate. It's just how it works. And the rules were set up where the owners share revenue. Now you have terminology in these CBAs, the collective bargaining agreement, which gives them, how do we say this, Scott, in a pleasant way, gives them the excuses not to spend money if they don't want to spend money, right? We got the first apron, now we got the second apron, and all of those things. However, there's always a way. There's always creativity within these collective bargaining agreements, which can be exercised if need be. And there will always be a way to retain your talent, provided you perform. Now, the movement and all of those things is getting more and more difficult. You can see by this collective bargaining agreement, I mean, by this year or this summer in free agency. It was very limited what they could do. You see a lot of extensions going on because that's one of the ways that owners can retain talent and then be able to evaluate that talent from the standpoint of saying what's their true value or what their perceived value is. That's what the analytics is truly all about. Scott has been there recently. I was there some years ago. And that's one of the ways you want to make sure that every player is somewhere in their, whatever your evaluation is, or whatever we feel their value is, you want to make sure that those players are there so that it gives you the, you hear these terms like cap flexibility and all of the things that executives like Scott Perry would always say, when it I have to reserve my cap flexibility. You want to make sure that you don't have a player that's not overvalued, and you clearly want a player who is, performing beyond, especially on a rookie scale deal. Okay. So it's always a way, but as an agent, I can say this, it's getting more and more difficult to be able to, let's say, get players put into the system where you can utilize those mid-level exceptions and tax exceptions, tax exemptions, and all of those things. Now that's getting more and more difficult to do. But the one thing that will allow, let's say, more flexibility to utilize the system will be the revenue that theoretically should open up a little bit, open up a little bit more movement, and you should see more movement as the teams, the league generates more revenue. But that's a big if. Every year we do that audit, right, Scott? And everyone seems to, it's always, It always gets, seems like it's not growing at the rate in which it's always projected.
Right.
So
you know, one thing I would add more to for our listeners, and a big important thing, at least for me when I was a general manager, and I use this phrase a lot, it's important that we be able to put the proper valuation on talent. What do I mean when I say that? So as BJ knows, as an agent, and this was agents say to you often, well, the market says this for a particular player, you know, that he's in the $20 to $25 million range based on, you know, what he averaged in terms of scoring and rebound and assist, whatever the case may be. Now, as a team, you can either agree with that market to try to go after that player, or you could try to establish your own market. When I mean by, you know, saying, okay, yeah, I like the player, but boy, I don't want to eat up so much of my salary cap. I don't think he's a $20 to $25 million player, or I don't think he's a $30 to $35 million player. And then it's incumbent upon me to pass maybe on that player and find a player that I think can do very similar things for maybe half the cost. Mm-hmm. And that's how you go out, build your roster. Now for the star players, and I think I mentioned this to you last week, Mo, when you're talking about max players, you know, again, my definition of max players may be different than a lot of other executives in the league. I think we have, it's great for the players that they're, how many, BJ, you may know the exact number, how many max contracts are in the league from an agent perspective. I mean, but it seems like we're just giving away max contracts left and right. I'm sure it's over 60 players.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But for me, I don't see, and it's no disrespect to the players, great, they can get it. Heck, if 90 of them get it, you know, great for them. But when you're running a team, I got to look at it and say, no, I don't see 60 players that are true max players. Again, I define my max players as guys who are going to sell out your arena, going to minimum get you to the conference semifinals. They're going to impact winning just that their presence alone being on the roster, a.k.a. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joker, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, Luka Doncic, players like that. So, and I'm sure, you know, I left out a handful of others, but you get my point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that question brings up a lot of this conversation that we're having.
Absolutely.
Well, just to also point out, since we're going, taking a deep dive here, is Scott is exactly right. You know, you can look at the system, look at a player, evaluate. That's what makes the league a terrific league, because, you know, another person's problem is another man's wish and what they would love, and it fits their team. That's what makes the league special. However, there's been a new mindset that has occurred here. It seems like it's been forever now, when it, you know, we start saying trust the process. Okay. Now, when we said trust the process, now what you're seeing, let's just take an example in this year's free agency. The Detroit Pistons elected not to utilize their cap space. They had cap space.
Yes.
Okay. So now, you know, you're saying, okay, well, what are they doing? Well, we kind of know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. No one really ever wants to believe that's what it is. But now when we talk about value and what the salary cap was put in place to do, and it goes under the notion that everyone is trying to win. And now we can't say that. We can't prove that that's what it is. But we all know kind of like what's going on. There's a new variable in here, which now the thinking is, well, the best way to do it is if we're going to build a team with any sustainability, right? Is that the terminology, Scott?
Yeah, it's a terminology. Go through the game.
We have to go through the draft.
Yeah, and I'm going to use a political term. Teams are kicking the can down the road.
Yes, yes. So Mo, that's a great question.
Yeah.
It's great. So the collective bargaining agreement says one thing, but it may function in another capacity based on, you know, there's a lot of interpretations here. There's a lot of what we call cap specialists who are doing what they do. But as we know, there's probably, I don't know, let's just be kind here. There's probably half of the teams in the league feel they have a legit chance to win, right? We're being kind. And then there's another half of the teams that say, hey, we got to build through the draft because of that's the because we're a small market team or whatever the case may be.
They don't want the clock to start on them. They're trying to delay the
GMs don't want to get fired. Them, be if real. You say you're rebuilding, you can't get fired for not winning. Let's just call it what it is. Okay.
You know what? Depending upon where you're at. You know, there's some markets that are gonna be less tolerant of and down the road.
Oh man, exactly. This is too political. Is this a political? Right,
let's keep it moving.
Exactly.
Sean C says that KD is one of my favorite players and is clearly one of the best players in the NBA. But why do you think he and any of his teams have never gone close to challenging since he left the Warriors? It seems crazy to me that he hasn't challenged with his talent. Also, watching the Olympics, I now see what BJ means when he says KD would be KD in any era. I think. The easiest answer to that is with the Warriors, he was joining a team that was already competing for a championship. And because the salary cap spiked, he was able to move over there. In Brooklyn, him and Kyrie went and signed over there, and then they gutted the rest of the roster and they were doing kind of makeshift pieces. The same things happened now in Phoenix. And then they went and traded for Bradley Beal's $50 million, which I think was a huge error. So it's just the construction of these rosters around Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has been an extremely talented player wherever he's been in his career. But you also have to factor in he's an older player now coming off these injuries and he can't quite do everything the same way that he once did across 82 games and the playoffs. So I don't know if you guys have anything to add on that, why the Nets and the Suns have not been able to challenge with KD.
Mo, points are very well taken, and I agree with a lot of them. Look, Kevin Durant, I was with Kevin Durant when he started. I was part of the front office that drafted Kevin, brought him into the NBA, spent an entire season with him. It was like a younger brother to me. And I believe I told BJ at the time when working with Kevin that first year, I said, this guy can score as well as anybody I've been around the game. Matter of fact, I think I called him George Gervin 2.0. And how efficient George Gervin was. George Gervin was a career 51% shooter from the field. Excellent three-point shooter, excellent free throw shooter. KD, taller, longer, and he has everything that Gerv had, has some more stuff than Gerv. Only thing he doesn't have that Gerv have is the finger roll. But KD doesn't need it at 7 feet. KD is a basketball holic, basketball junkie, whatever catch term you like, that is him. The game means everything to him. He loves to play. And he is, you know, terrific offensive player who, when he got to Golden State, I felt really improved defensively. That helped him and helped that team get over the hump in winning those two championships. And as we know, roster construction is huge when you're talking about trying to win a championship. You need some good fortune. The experiment in Brooklyn did not work for a variety of reasons. Guys didn't fit. Injuries, the whole together, it just was not put together, in my opinion, to be able to win a championship. And Phoenix, you know, he's there now. He's there with two really good players. But again, because everything is invested in those three guys in terms of money, they haven't been able to put enough around them to be able to be champions. And, you know, Bradley Beal was out a ton again this past year. And like you said, Kevin is older now. And Kevin is one of those guys I know, if he can play 82 games, he's going to be playing 82 games because he just loves to play that much. But terrific player. He's got two titles. I'm sure, you know, if he could do some things over again, he might have made some different decisions in terms of you know, whether he stayed in Golden State, made a different decision to go, you know, elsewhere. If he did leave Golden State, you know, who knows, but can't look back. And he's still going to be remembered, in my opinion, as one of the all-time greats.
Absolutely. Pierce McGlinchey says, based off of last season, which player is under the most pressure to perform this upcoming season?
How do we define pressure? Yeah, how do we define pressure? Like, what do you mean? How are we defining that?
I guess it would be expectations.
Well, I would say
I think Paul George maybe, because he's just signed a max contract and moved to the whole way to the other side of the NBA, despite getting the Clippers to trade the farm for him. Well, so I think he's under a significant amount of pressure.
Yeah. Well, there's always one player to me, and for whatever reason, hasn't been able to, and you're going to have fun with this one, Mo. If you say Paul George, but I don't think anyone is saying Paul George is going to be expected to be the best player on that team or the second best player on that team. Right. But the player that has the most pressure, I think, is Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid, because he is the best player on the team. And I don't think anyone is going to argue that. He's been the MVP. We know if he's healthy, it's a big if, that he has a chance, but for whatever reason. So if you're saying who has the player with the most pressure to perform this year, I would say Joel Embiid, because anything less than getting to the finals, he can't even get to the conference finals. He's got to get, he's got to get to the finals.
Yep. Yes.
And perform because of his talent. I mean, Joel Embiid is, I don't care what the situation is, you can't say he's not a top five talent. Mm-hmm. Arguably the best player at any given moment during in a game, in a series. I don't care who he's playing against. But for whatever reason, it hasn't happened. It's been a lot of chit-chatter with the last 3 or 4 years, for whatever the case may be. So I would say he, based on his talent, because he is incredibly talented, and he hasn't been able to deliver the goods. And I think now, if they're healthy, you can't say he doesn't have a supporting cast. You can't say he doesn't have whatever it is. It's just now, if he can stay on the court. If he can stay on the court, I think he has a good chance. But for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to do that.
I'll just add real quickly to it, because it's interesting. You guys went to the team, Philadelphia, obviously. You know, Paul George would be number two for me, but Embiid, without question, number one. It's not even close. Embiid went during the finals on national TV and winked and said, "Hey, if we could add a little extra to our roster, wink, wink, PG." Okay, they're going to be ready to roll and challenge. Yep. So now, and
they've been trusting that process for 10 years.
Absolutely. So now he's got to, even though he hadn't stayed healthy, he better stay healthy this year. He's got pressure to stay healthy and come in the best shape of his life for this season, and stay injury free for the most part. And then perform. And I agree, they got to get it. They got to make it to the finals, you know, conference finals. Yep. At the very bare minimum, but that will come with a lot of criticism if it's just the conference finals. But boy, conference semifinals or less, then that is a total disaster.
Bleed Green says, do we think Jarrett Allen's 3-year bag will stump Evan Mobley's growth at the five in Cleveland? Well, we answered that on yesterday's show. You guys got to keep up. We'd be bringing you these episodes every day.
Exactly.
Andy Williams says, what would be considered a good deal for Lauri Markkanen and the Utah Jazz? I think from the August the 6th, they can sign him to an extension. Scott, what kind of numbers would you be looking at, Lauri Markkanen?
We're in that world where guys are getting a lot of money.
And the Jazz I like
Lauri Markkanen a lot. I think he's very talented. Do I see him as a max player? No, I don't. But I would pay him very well. I would pay him below that, but I'd pay him to where he'd be comfortable, and where we still would have enough money to go out and get any extra players, because they got some good young players coming up in the system. So, you know, is he looking at somewhere around 35, you know, per year, something like that? I could see that Utah doing something around that area.
You thinking the same, BJ? You spent some time around the Jazz this summer.
You know, this is going to probably surprise a lot of people who listen to the show, and this is going to definitely surprise Scott. Because I define a max player by this player has to affect one, and I prefer both. The bottom line, which has got to affect my team in the win column. That's just bottom line. Mm-hmm. And then the second line, he's got to affect my top line, which is, you know, people say, hey, such and such team's coming into town. You know, here's a guy that you might not want to miss if he's in the Eastern Conference. You don't even come to the Western Conference once a year. Mm-hmm. You know, when Steph Curry comes East, that's a hot ticket.
Yes.
Okay. When your star player comes out West, that's a hot ticket.
Mm-hmm.
In this era, this current era, there's a thing that I'm concerned about that I can't compromise. Is I need a chance. I know it's impossible to win every game, but I need a chance. And it's impossible to win with a team full of young players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have to look, if I'm Utah, well, their top line is covered. I don't know if you guys, I know Scott has been out there. Mo, I don't know if you've ever been out there. That place is sold out.
Yeah.
They sold out. I don't know if there's anything else to do. That place is sold out for summer league.
Yeah, it's the only game in town.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
they get a bump.
Lauri Markkanen may not be a player that you say will carry, like we're talking about Joel Embiid, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He may not be in your top five talent. He may not be in your top 10.
Mm-hmm.
But Utah is a different, you know, as far as free agency. I don't think they are a team that can go out there and compete in the free agent market. Therefore, I think Lauri Markkanen is a max player there. And here's why I say that. Mm-hmm. Is because Lauri Markkanen shows up, he plays, and I think it's almost impossible, but correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, to try to keep a, you know, we talk about culture and we talk about building confidence. I think it's impossible when you're just getting beat up every single night without a chance to win. Lauri Markkanen gives you a chance to win on any given night. And if one of those young guys that they're drafting or developing, like we always see, you know, we got 20 coaches sitting over there now, right? If one of those guys develop where they're drafting, right? They're drafting in the lottery right now.
Yes.
They certainly have a chance now to catapult into a place where you say, you know what, Lauri Markkanen, our young guy and whatever. And now you can certainly have a team that's very competitive, right? You need one of those guys to play at an elite level. But I think Lauri Markkanen in that market is too valuable to give up on, unless you're getting something back in return that's like has a chance, like to be that same caliber of player. Now, if you're getting another player back that maybe fits the way you want to play, okay, I can accept that or I can respect that. But I think Lauri Markkanen, I mean, he's been an all-star over there, right?
Yep.
If I remember correctly,
he's been an all-star. He's been an all-star.
Is a player to me that can play with other good players. You know, he doesn't demand the ball. He's not a ball stopper. He's got size. He's athletic. He can shoot. So to me, in that market and what they're doing out there in Utah, I think he is a player that will warrant them moving forward in whatever direction they go for it. Every direction they go for it. I think he can play with young players. I think he can play with lead guards, big guys. So I like him for that market. I think he is a valuable piece, and I would do that because of the market that I'm in.
No, we agree. I like him. You just got a little soft on me. You want to give him the max. I'm gonna keep around for a little less.
I don't know any max players that want to sign in Utah though. I hear what BJ's saying. Because if you're a max player, you don't want to be that.
Yeah,
I don't know if they want. I would.
Well, Lori Marketing likes it in Utah.
Yeah, I would call it, Scott, the small market tax. You know, okay. There's some small markets, the agents would say, you want to just sweeten the deal a little bit to make sure.
And you're right. And I know times have changed. You have to forgive me sometimes, because you remember I got my start in Detroit.
Yes.
And I was with the team that went to 6 straight conference finals and became world champions without one max player.
As they say, facts. That's a fact.
Facts, exactly.
But now,
a couple of them, if they were coming around today, they probably would get max salaries.
Look at what Rudy Gobert gets paid and think that Ben Wallace wouldn't get paid something similar.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a bunch more questions we'll get to next week, but there's one that I want to end this on here. LJC says, rank you guys from 1 to 3 on who's most likely to win MasterChef and what would your signature dish be? It's time someone started asking the important questions. So if the 3 of us go on MasterChef, I'm gonna say BJ will come in 3rd place. Because they don't have the barbecue inside. It's filmed inside a TV studio, and BJ will be smoking out the grill. It will mess up the cameras and the lights and the sound.
Okay,
so
okay.
That's what I'm saying. But what do you guys think?
Okay,
all right. Well, first of all, we got to discuss what we're gonna make.
Yeah.
What's your signature dish?
You want me? I'm gonna give you my signature meal. You want me to start with this one? Cause I know yours is wings, so I know you're going to involve wings.
We'll get to mine. But let me hear yours first.
Okay, you're gonna come. I'm gonna go on MasterChef, and I'm gonna bring a little U.S. Southern hospitality to the show.
We're doing a main course and a dessert. Yeah, 3 courses.
Yeah. You okay? So what do you want me to start with? You want me to start with the main course? Start with the main course?
No. The stars, that was it. Appetizers, you guys call it.
Appetizers.
You guys have entrees and appetizers. I don't know which one's which.
We had with the Southern meal. We're gonna do. It's not necessarily an appetizer. We're gonna do. I'm just gonna do, have the meal prepared, laid out. So I'll start. Matter of fact, I'm making some now as we speak. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have some collard greens.
Oh, don't say that. Exactly. Don't tell Mo what that is.
Mo said,
you guys, hold on. Who are you referring to, Mo?
Exactly.
I know about collard greens. Mo, don't worry.
My sides are gonna be collard greens, macaroni and cheese. And a potato salad. I make a potato salad. You ask some people that have been to the house. Matter of fact, I've cooked for some of these guys in the league, so they'll know if they're listening. They'll know about those dishes. So that'll be my start in terms of size. And then I'll make a little cornbread too, because everybody likes a little cornbread.
Now we talk.
Cornbread and side. Yeah. And then my entrees, I got to do 2. I do a fish and a chicken. I'm gonna fry you some catfish. Now, I was king at frying catfish. Now you have to have acquired taste for that. And then I can go either way. I can go with a great chicken. I can fry you some chicken too if I want. And if I have guests that don't want to eat too much fried, I do a chuck roast with a mushroom gravy on it. Slice it up. The presentation is awesome. And for dessert, I know BJ will appreciate this. We're gonna have some homemade banana pudding.
Oh,
top that. Exactly.
Hey, Bo, that's what they do.
Exactly.
Listen, BJ, I spent enough time in Atlanta to know exactly what goes on.
Oh,
how delicious the Southern food is.
Okay, well, I just want to make sure. You know,
I got some friends.
If you've been in Atlanta, you like the wings in Atlanta. You know,
exactly.
You like the lemon pepper wings.
Wingstop and all that. No, you have to come.
Okay.
Exactly.
BJ, what's on your menu?
The man just told you.
No, you called me the same thing as him.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
No, what are you making? Because you can't make the same thing.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
Not every American person can make the same thing.
Hey.
No.
No.
I'm just putting forth my best. Yeah, I'm just putting my best foot forward. I can do a lot of other things now, Mo. If you want some Italian, we can go there. I can do a lasagna for you. I could do my thing in the kitchen, Mo.
Mo, you said you wanted an American meal with appetizers, then you go get an American meal with appetizers.
That's the question.
But you said a meal, Mo. If you came to my house, that's the type of meal you gonna get.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just waiting on the invitation.
Hey, Mo, I left one thing off for you.
Good.
But I was like, yeah.
I know what it's going to be.
And BJ, some black eyed peas.
See, you got to have it.
Exactly.
I know the black eyed peas.
Mo, you got to have it. I sent you the photo. Let me send y'all the photo right now of that meal.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
That's what we do. You said they. Who are you talking about?
American people, bro.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't grow up with appetizers in my house. Scott, did you?
I'm going to keep it completely real with you guys. I don't really know when American people say appetizers, what they mean. I just hear them say it on Hell's Kitchen. They're like, I'm on hot apps. I'm on apps. I don't really know what they're talking about because here you have starters, you have a main course, and you have a dessert.
If you go to a restaurant, when they say an appetizer, it would be probably what you call a starter.
Yeah, yeah.
Something very small.
Small, you know, that's it. Now, BJ sent a picture here.
Oh, I hear he got everything on there.
I'm going to throw this on the screen.
No, Mo, don't throw it on the screen because that's not what they do. But that's what they do. See, you got to know the difference. Mo, we don't do appetizers. We don't do all of that. This is what we do.
Okay. I'm basing my knowledge on Hell's Kitchen. That's what I'm basing it on. Hell's Kitchen.
You need to come and visit Scott Perry at BJ Armstrong. And you can get all of that. Hell, I see you. When I was growing up, I've been to Scott Perry's family, to his home. And Scott's been to my home.
Vice versa. Exactly.
And we know everything Scott knows, everything that he said, that's how we grew up.
And we in our 50s, Mo.
Hey, Mo. I hear it, bro.
It sounds unbelievable.
Hey, Mo, I told you, Mo. You make it down here to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna tell my wife either she's got to turn her head because you know she wants me to cook healthy now. Now I'm older, so you know I can't you know some of that fried stuff and all like that. But she's gonna give me. I already told her. She's gonna give me a pass. She'll let me fry you some stuff up and cook the greens and everything else like they need to be cooked.
I'm with it. We don't get none of that over here. We don't get none of that over here.
Yeah, well, you know, Mo, you might not want to leave afterwards.
Maybe. You just gonna make some cool.
As much as you like wings. We can turn you around. I can tell you that much.
Hey, I hear it, man. I be eating a lot of Jamaican food. That's my favorite.
So you like the jerk fried?
Yeah, the jerk chicken, the rice and peas, the dumplings. You know what I'm saying? That's what I be on. You get a little oxtail going.
Oxtail, okay.
No, you do a little.
I'm not a big oxtail fan, but I know people like Scott.
See, now you got to come visit me.
Oh no, they have them. I'm just not a little tough for me.
But I hear it. But
Oh, BJ's got the wings as well on deck. I see.
Hey, like I said, there's nothing,
I'm just, you know, BJ is the grill master. He's got that title. So,
hey,
I'm not gonna compete with that.
I respect it. Well, I better go find my passport.
I'm gonna show you, Mo. What we did. This was like a couple weeks ago. We had some people at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And just to let you, this is like a couple weeks ago.
Great.
That mac and cheese looking crazy.
Let it go. That's what we do, Mo. I don't know what kind of cheese they use. But I know what we use, and I know what Scott used.
Exactly.
You need that little crust on the top of the mac and cheese. I see.
No question.
I'm just letting you know. Hey. So Scott named it. Scott probably is one and two, and I'm just gonna fall in line because I'm gonna give respect because I know the man can burn.
No doubt. Well, Scott, you're gonna be seeing me very soon. Just know, you're gonna see me soon.
Just give me a heads up, Mo. I just need a couple of days. That's it.
No doubt. Appreciate you guys. Another episode, another week in the books. Appreciate you guys for listening. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to the show. Usually, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And until next time, you guys have a great weekend and get buckets.